Welcome to the competition tribunal under the leadership of Mr. Mena. You're welcome, sir. I think I've already done the introductory comments. Why do you care? Without a waste of time, I would really want to welcome you all and hope during that break. I mean, we haven't seen you for quite some time now. You managed to implement most of the things you promised us. But besides that, we're looking forward to the new plan that you're coming up with now. Let's hope it's going to see us through the difficult challenges that you face. May we, you know, all members, let me also welcome our brand new deputy chairperson. I know last time when you were here, Mr. Manuel, you were complaining that the workload is just too much. You've been waiting for the appointment of the deputy commissioner. Today we're happy to meet with Amber. Thank you. And if I'm not mistaken, Daniel's here. Sorry about that. Can we then, while we welcome Mr. Daniel, allow you to give us your presentation. I'm not, maybe for the purpose of making it easier for Mr. Daniel, you're meeting us for the first time. You know the chair by now because we met, you know, on the side. Can I introduce other members so that you don't refer them by honorable members only, but by their names also? Just closer to you, there is Mr. Atkinson, representing the Democratic Alliance. Next to him is also another Democratic Alliance rep, Dr. Kado. And then we go to the gentleman with the four eyes like mine, Mr. Triani, representing the African National Congress, and then the whip of the committee, also member of the African National Congress, Mr. Bella. We have other members who are attending other committees. We have since received an apology from Mr. Pekinini, who is attending the Minerals Portfolio Committee, and Ms. Masindi, who's also attending the Rural Development Committee. Mr. Molefe, we did receive his grievances apology. Those are the apologies that we have received. May we then continue by getting the presentation from Mr. Molefe.
Chair, thank you very much. Just to introduce the delegation, I think you know the three of us. We're here regularly, and Daniel joins us as Deputy Chair. We'll say a little bit more about his appointment a little later on. Just to move on to these are the alignment slides which we presented previously. That's too much to say about these slides. They just relate to how what we do aligns with these other objectives we presented these on previous occasions. Just to remind you that the tribunal is a court of the system, where my colleagues in the commission are the policemen and prosecutor of the system. We are the court. For that reason, we're less able to have a plan because we are reactive to what people bring to us. We're not proactive. And that is a constraint. It limits what we can do by way of future planning. That doesn't mean that we don't have objectives. We do have objectives. Important is that we are efficient about the way we go about it, our adjudication job, our job as judges. Secondly, we don't just judge cases for the sake of it. Cases must explain something to the marketplace about behaviour. That's why building and developing effective stakeholder relationships is important. And Lorato will say a bit more about what we've done on that front. And like all other institutions, we still adhere to good corporate governance and sound business practices. So let me deal with the first objective, that's effective and efficient adjudication. We can't say, as I explained to this committee before, we can't say that we will stop 5 mergers this year and we will find X number of companies, R1 billion. Each case has to be judged on its own merits and fairly, but what we can do in terms of targets is to see that we do it within good time. So our targets are about doing what must we do and what time must we do it in. And how can we improve the management of the information that we can provide? So let's just look at mergers. Mergers are the, as the Commission has explained to you in their earlier presentation, large mergers are the type of mergers that the tribunal must approve. Intermediate mergers can be cleared by the Commission, and we only get to hear them if there's an appeal against the Commission decision. So most of our work relates to large mergers. So we've set these particular targets. There's nothing new about these targets. We've done them before. How quickly do we set cases down? How quickly do we issue our orders? Why is that important? Because until such time as we've cleared a merger, the people can't implement the deal. So that's why that figure is very high. It's our highest target of 95% of orders must be done within 10 days of the end of the hearing. And we usually keep, in fact, we are ahead of that target, I think, on most occasions. Then we give reasons. In other words, we give an order which simply says whether the merger's been approved, whether it's prohibited, or it's approved subject to conditions. Later we must explain why did we make that decision. That requires writing the reasons for that decision, requires more work, so that's why that target is slightly lower. As I said, intermediate mergers are, and small mergers are ones that come to us by way of an appeal. Although it's technically an appeal, we usually get more evidence. So once we've actually heard a case, it doesn't actually distinguish itself much from what would be a large merger. It's the same amount of work for us. The first two targets are the same as they are for the set down and the orders issued, are the same as they are for large mergers. There's a slightly smaller target for less demanding target, should I say, for reasons issued, and that's 60%, and that is because the appeals are usually more complicated and therefore the reasons are going to take longer to write. The other cases that we hear are prohibitive practice cases. What are prohibitive practice cases? Those are the cartel cases and the abuse of dominance cases. And what we've done more recently is to classify the complexity of the case and set different time periods for hearing those matters. Procedural matters, every case, whether it's a merger or a prohibitive practice case, will raise some procedural issues. If you've got two lawyers in a room, they will come up with 4 different procedural points. We'll have to decide them. Therefore, we've set targets for how to decide these as well. Going to hand on to Lorato now, who's going to deal with the information side.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to go quickly through our record keeping as well as our deal with the public and the media and our stakeholders. In terms of our adjudication process, it requires that our information must be accurate and it must be timely. And we rely on our electronic case management system to do that. I think we have presented the CMS to this committee before, and we've also seen what we do with it. We manage all our cases, the case function electronically. We saw all our documents just to ensure that we can easily retrieve them and also that for safe storage. And also we use the information that we input on the system for performance information and reporting purposes. And we've just pulled out this graph just to show you the kind of information that you can pull out of the CMS. as you can see on this report, this just shows the industry and sectors that we dealt with in the previous financial year. And I think Norman will sort of like just give you more information about the major outcomes when the unit talks again. In terms of how we build out and develop our stakeholder relationships, we have communication with our stakeholders, and our stakeholders would really like the general public, and how we do that is through the press releases, our website, the social media, and the learner programs that I'll talk more on. And some of our stakeholders would be the Economic Development Department, Parliament, the legal community, and our general staff. In terms of the learner program, and Chair, this is something that comes out of this committee that you had suggested before that we should try and run a program like this. We have successfully run a program in March. We invited school kids from Holy Trinity School in Uxbridgeville. We had about 12 learners there, like from grade 10, 11, and 12, and we've since gotten feedback from the principal about the pupils' feedback, and I think in our annual report we'll have the feedback from the pupils directly, and then you'll see how that works. So these are the school kids, there are with a teacher there, and in one of the photos is them sitting in the courtroom. Just in terms of targets pertaining to communication, our intention is to ensure that 75% of the measures that we issue, and that we issue the press releases of the measures within 2 business days of the border. In terms of prohibited practice, our intention is to ensure that 100% of the decisions are released to the media within 2 business days of the order. What we also did in the past few months is that we've made a few changes onto our website. What we've done is that we ensure that we constantly update our reel at the top on the home page so that it's current, and whatever information is there is what's current at that moment. And then also we make sure that matters of public interest are also updated onto the on the home page so that people can easily access that as well. And we now making use of Twitter as well, so you can also follow us from there. Our handle is @comtrip, and that's also for regular updates. In terms of like future changes that we intend implementing, is that we want to simplify our press release page so that people can actually go in, type a date or a case, and be able to get the press release that we issued in terms of that matter. We also want to do a click view link box, taking readers directly to pages that are most regularly searched. And then we also intend putting our online magazine on the website as well. So currently, so this is the view. This is what it looked like when the case against banks was brought before us. So people could actually just go onto there, see commission against banks, and then if you click on viewing case documents, then you can actually access the referral document by the commission. And if you go into there, you'll actually get all the non-confidential documents that are in that matter. So if you're talking about the Citibank, the transcript is there, the order that we issued recently is also in there, the commission's supplementary affidavits are also in there. So all these documents are there for the general public to have access to. And then the new online magazine that we have implemented recently, it has replaced what we had before that we used to call the Tribunal Tribune. Trials and the Tribunal is what the new magazine is called, and it's going to be published on our website in soon. And then it also sort of gives more information than what the Tribunal Tribune did. And then also in terms of circulation, we have made it available to literally everyone because that's going to be on the website. Whereas the Tribune was only sent through to the committee and I think just to the tribunal, because not a lot of people may have. So this is what the Tribune looks like. It was also sort of like the web document. The Trials and Tribune is more interactive, so you can click at different headings and read more about those. And we also what we call it Celele Celele, which is an in-house communication. So this is distributed just internally between staff, just giving them updates about what's happening in the office, who's their base is, and who's more to which department, and all of that. And I'll hand over now to you.
Okay, so our third objective goes around being an accountable and transparent and sustainable entity, and it deals specifically with moving towards getting an unqualified audit outcome and meeting various compliance requirements as an accountable and transparent institution, and then the continued implementation of case management internships. Just to give you an indication of the numbers of staff we have, we currently have 21 permanent staff members. That excludes the full-time members. We have two case managers on a long-term contract for 1 year, and we have 5 interns. 2 of those are in case management, and 3 of them are either in registry or in finance. And then, of course, we have 5 full-time members. The next slide kind of summarizes our budget requirements and our allocation and other income over the next 4 years. Both this current year and the year going, well, the previous financial year and the 3 years of the MTF period. So you will see that up until the end of 2018-2019, we are still using a small portion of our accumulated surplus to cover our funding requirements. Then in 2019-2020, we have a need for additional funding requirements. You'll also see there that the expected filing fee from the Commission has been constant over the 3 years, and that, I think, relates primarily also to the answer that Mo gave in the Commission's presentation, that it's very difficult to predict exactly how much is coming in filing fees, and that was based on their estimates over the next 3 years. But that can vary either up or down. Then the next graph is just an illustration over the period of the Tribunal's functioning, what's happened with expenditure, the grants, filing fees, and interest received. So you'll see that expenditure is increasing year on year, and while the grant is increasing, it's not increasing at the same rate as which expenditure is increasing, and you can see the fluctuations in the green line of the filing fees. So we can't predict the filing fees reliably at all. And then the interest received is just a small line at the bottom, and it's mainly related to the interest that we receive on any funds we're not using, which are held with the Corporation for Public Deposits. And then we divide our budget based on our strategic objectives. So the strategic objectives are also broken down into smaller strategic goals, which are under the category side, and then you'll see the objective side. And you can see that the adjudicative process takes up the bulk. Just on the timeliest hearings and issuing of judgments, it's about 48.35% of our budget, with the other amounts contributing to a smaller proportion of the estimated budget for the 17-18 financial year. If you look at our APP, it gives you a much more detailed breakdown of the line items of the budget, but just for noting for this meeting purposes is that personnel accounts for 58.11% of our budget, and part-time tribunal members' fees paid to them when they sit on hearings or write decisions is about 9.38%. So really 68% of our budget is just on effectively personnel costs. Now I'll hand over to Norman to address the challenges.
Well, previously we had, I don't know for how many years, come to the committee with various problems that we were facing, and they didn't seem like they would ever get resolved, and I'm pleased to say that in this year they have been resolved. The first perennial problem have been vacancies amongst tribunal members. We had two positions vacant, including that of the deputy chair, and I'm pleased to say with effect from January of this year, those two new members have been appointed, and as introduced already, our colleague Enver Daniels has been appointed as the deputy chair, and he's also been appointed on a full-time basis, which takes our full-time complement. We have 11 members altogether. We had four full-time members. We will now have five. And we also have as another part-time member appointed Professor Halton Cheadle of the, who's at the University of Cape Town. Enver Daniels is probably known to many of you. He's the former Chief State Law Advisor position that he held for 20 years, almost 20 years. And so we're very pleased to have him and Professor Cheadle on board to join us. The other big challenge was about our premises, and you would have visited our premises and we complained that we were cramped. We have now, as the Commission indicated, we've done an internal swap with the Commission. So if you see the picture on the left is our two of our case managers sitting right next to each other, very cramped, and the picture on the right, which is why the young woman is smiling, is where she has her office on her own. So what's happened is that we've moved to the first floor of the same building. The Commission has moved out of that floor, moved some divisions across the road to the building across the road, and another division occupies where we were in on the third floor of that building. And so at the moment, our existing space needs have been met. The Commission, as they've indicated, has a bigger long-term problem. So this is simply seen as an interim measure. Office space will remain a challenge for the institution, but at least from our own selfish point of view, we are comfortable at the moment where we are. We meet our existing needs. The Commission talked to you about the number of cases that are coming through, and we're just going to talk to you about future challenges as trying to deal with a number of those cases. You'll see that there are 96 cartel cases only on our books at the moment. In other words, we record when there's an actual referral made by the Commission. 16 other types of cases, so these would be abuse of dominance cases or other vertical restrictive practices. So there are 112 that we've got. Now, you might want to ask me why the Commission gave you a figure of 60 and why we're giving you a fixture of 96. And so during the tea break, I had the benefit of discussing with the Commissioner, and the reason is that they would classify their initiation as one investigation, even though it might lead to more than one referral. So that explains the difference between their figure of 60 and ours of 96. So just as an example, there is a cartel case at the moment which we have involving shipping companies who bring Toyotas from Japan to South Africa, and the Commission had one initiation, but there have been 11 referrals. So they would count that as one case, we would count that as 11, the 11 referrals. That accounts for the fact that the difference in the figures. Of the complaint referrals that are pending, the 96, only 15 have actually been set down for hearing. And one is just pending a decision. In other words, we finished the case, we're just writing the decision. So in other words, approximately 15.5% of cases are set down, the rest has still got to be set down. So that's a figure of concern about how we're going to process that. And of these cases, their length in time varies. We never set a case down at any one time for more than 10 days. So here are four cases that we've set down of the 15, that are going to last at least 10 days, they may take longer. Here are another six cases that are going to take 5 days or longer. Now, in each case, depending particularly on cartel cases, most of these cases are cartel cases, you may have any number of people who are actually defending the case. And the length of the case often depends on how many people are going to defend it. So if you look at the one case, number seven in our list, there are 11 defendants. In the bank case, which is at number eight there, there are 14 defendants at the moment. So that leads to protraction of the proceedings. So again, concern about how we're going to process all these cases. This here, and this is slightly out of sequence of your slides, slides, if you can just perhaps look on the screen, this is our calendar of matters, and you'll see that it ends on the 23rd of February. So we are up in cases up until the 23rd of February, and here we talk to you on the 3rd of May. Here is a graph of the growth in the number of matters that we've heard. So if you look at this graph, the blue line represents all our matters, which include private practices plus mergers. Below that is a red line, only with the merger cases. Now, for a while, there was a close link between the number of mergers cases and the total number of matters. As you look more recently, you'll see them diverging. In other words, the distance between the two is growing, which means that there are now a growing number of cases which are not mergers, which is due to the growth in cartel cases, and which are going to prolong and strain our resources in trying to get these matters heard. And although there is a fluctuation over a period of time in how many mergers and how many matters we get, there's generally an upward movement since we were started off in business in 1999. So generally, even though there are occasional downward movements, we're going up all the time. So how do we meet, what's our solution to meet this particular challenge? Well, we've got to look at, there are three different options here. The one is that we must, now that we've got our full complement of members, we must have more panels hearing matters at the same time. This has its pros and cons, because although five people are full-time, six people are part-time, they're not always available for us on a longer case. They have been available to us for a shorter case. The challenge is trying to say, look, this case is going to take 10 days. I know you've got another legal practice. Please give us 10 days. The second problem is that the second way of trying to solve the problem is to use our case management when we talk to parties before the hearing starts to try and shorten hearing time and say to them, look, we'll try and hear you in 5 days. We'll save your clients money. Will you please actually make sure that you can actually get the matter heard? In other words, don't listen to your own voice for too long during the proceedings. Try and tailor your case so we can meet that. And sometimes people will get by and sometimes we won't, but we need to actually get lawyers used to this idea so we can actually restrict case time from what it would otherwise be. Over the long term, I think that we're looking at legislative amendments. We should increase the number of members that we have to hear cases beyond the 11. At the moment, there is a statutory cap on 11 tribunal members. We've got that. And only with amendment legislation could we have more members. And I think we've mentioned this to the committee before, and it's an idea that we, if amendments are going to come before the committee, that be looked at as a solution as well. So thank you very much. That's our presentation.
Thanks very much, Mr. Manoy, for the presentation. And both Ms. Sonnenberg and Ms. Duplet and Lerato Mataung. I thought perhaps Mr. Manoum would outline the duties and functions of the deputy chair so that we are able to understand as to what exactly the responsibilities be. I know, apart from being in addition to the commission, with some kind of responsibilities. Other than that, because he's a full-time person, may you just clarify to us what does that mean in essence?
Sorry, Sujeet, do you want me to break for other questions or do you want
to? No, just now. Just before we break for other questions.
Okay. This is the first time we've had somebody who is full-time in the position of deputy chair. So it's an issue that Mr. Daniels and I still want to discuss exactly how we do that. What's happening at the moment is that Mr. Daniels is getting a feel for the cases. So he's sitting in and he's been a very good servant of the tribunal, and he always puts his hand up and puts on a lot of matters. And so he's going to get experience of the cases and how we deal with that. But the statute itself doesn't actually delineate specific tasks. The statute simply says that in the absence of the chair, the deputy chair will assume those functions, and says nothing else. So it's something that we that there is a degree of flexibility on, and we're going to look at that as we're going forward. So it can involve a range from administrative functions to deputizing your chair in matters like appearing before the committee and addressing the public, and also the involvement of panels themselves, which you already is involved in.
Okay. So since January, it's been in and out of place of court. That's all. Because
right.
I thought by now it's May, since January the 1st, there could have been something that has been done just to for him to be able also to be settled, to know exactly what he's doing in the, within the commission. Moreover, that you've been also, you know, laboring the point that you do not have a deputy either. The function should be clear by now. We can pack it and wait until you finalize that here with Mr. Daniel, so, and perhaps with the minister also. I don't know whether he is supposed to, or the president is supposed to be part of the decision. But we'll wait until perhaps we finalize the first quarter report so that we understand the type of work that he's doing in the commission also. Member, we have the presentation that was presented so ably by the leadership of the commission, of the tribunal. May we interact with the presentation too. Ms. Atkinson, Dr. Kado, that is then.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to Mr. Menuhin for the presentation as well. I know the perennial problem has been one of personnel and of having enough people to be able to hear the cases. And you do say that obviously that problem seems to have been resolved by the fact that all those positions, but it does seem still that there's a greater requirement for human resources. Are you pushing to have any more people added? Because obviously if we look at the timetable now, you're setting cases out for February next year, that is obviously a concern for you. You still would appear not to have enough people to be able to do what you need to do properly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. So ask some of the same questions that I asked around tax exclusion cases to the Competition Commissioner.
Please talk to the mic. I personally cannot hear. Yes.
Specifically, are there any other settlements in the pipeline beyond the one that you signed off with Citibank for 70 million rand? Today being the deadline for exception applications, are you aware of any that have been filed? So the first question is around banks collusion, and the second one is really around excessive pricing cases. I read recently that there was a case that had been referred to by the Competition Commission around the supplier of clinker ash for bricks. But you don't hear many excessive pricing cases, do you? And I simply want to know why that is, and then what's the sort of time frames for that clinker ash bricks case. Thanks.
Thank you. That's it then.
Thank you very much, Chief. Thank you, Mr. Manuel, for the presentation. The first question is out of pure ignorance. I need your assistance yourself. I just want to know, once you have adjudicated on a matter and a decision has been pronounced, which may also include conditionalities, once we are through with the case, do you continue to have some kind of a relationship with the judgment that you have made, or do you make the judgment and then the matter referred to Competition Commission and other institutions, or do you have some follow-up in terms of whether what you pronounce upon is being implemented. That's the first one. On the second one, let me also congratulate you on the website. You can see you're making improvements there. That is highly appreciated, Mr. Manuel. The question in that regard is, we know that there's constraints on the resources. That is why the website so far, I think, is in English only. Am I correct? Do you have some plans perhaps to extend it to Sesotho and maybe Zulu? I know you can't cover all the 11 languages. It's not possible. But is there that thought that perhaps, you know, we should roll it out to those who speak Sesotho and Zulu just to make sure that we accommodate a bigger section of our population? Because if we restrict it to English, given the current political thing coming from apartheid and so on, it may seem to be a little bit restrictive. But I concede that it's not possible to do it in all the other languages. The last one, sir, is on the backlog. I see you have 96 cases, but practically only set down 15 of them for a hearing. And you are giving a reason, you are indicating here that as a long-term solution, you need to increase them. But that's something that can only happen in the future. What do you think can be done now before the amendment of legislation that could enhance the situation and improve your way? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Chairman.
No, thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. Only one question regarding the Lena program. What are the duration of the program? Because I hear you that saying that it shouldn't show the real understanding of the competition authorities.
Thank you. Any other questions? No second tranche question. Mr. Manuel, I think you alluded to the challenge around the personnel constraints, that's personal constraints, apart from the fact that two more were included. Is it only within the legal sector, or would you consider also economy? When we look at the case at points, it's the subtle case where it was thrown out because of particularly from our thinking that it's economic related issues, calculations and so forth. Maybe we'd want to also reinforce with at least one or two economists that would assist you in the investigation in that field. If you agree, perhaps you can just outline to us to what is it that we're talking about here in terms of what, in terms of your needs, your personal needs, additional personal needs, so that we can be in a position to understand. We'd want to support, but what are we supporting at the moment?
Okay, I'll respond to the question on the learner program. I think this is the first time that we did it, and our communications officer, Chantal Benjamin, spent a lot of time preparing for it and liaising with schools to see who were interested. And so it was a one-day visit for them to come to the tribunal where they were addressed by both the commission and the tribunal, and they were outlined the differences between the two institutions, and the commission spoke to them briefly on how they deal with matters, and then various tribunal members and case managers spoke to them on how we deal with issues. Prior to them coming to the school, Chantal had prepared a little case study for them, which dealt mainly with the bread cartel, which had been brought before the tribunal a number of years back. So that enabled them to kind of do some reading and then come with some information. So it's not intended to be a long program. It's intended to be something short where they're exposed to the tribunal, what we do, and you know, if anything comes out of there where students are further interested in finding out more, then we would accommodate them. Perhaps there's some of them who may want to come and work during the holidays and just get some experience. So it's the first one, and I think we learned some good lessons, and they benefited from it, and we will continue to do it going forward and maybe expand on what we cover. But I think it's more about introducing them to competition law and what is required if they want to follow a career either in competition law or in a government institution.
Can I just make a follow-up on that? I know it came from the committee, but can constituency offices perhaps encourage schools to come to Pretoria just to witness how you're proceeding with your court proceedings? And what would be the procedure so that the members also would understand beyond this committee? How do they print? Because it's true that we heard from also Mr. Bonakele that we run short of competition lawyers and practitioners. How do we encourage them to come to you? Or perhaps can't you assign a person or persons to go to school on that career day to just brief them around, you know, because different schools have different career days. Just to understand your requirements or what is required to be a competition practitioner.
Yeah, I think the main contact person would be Chantal Benjamin, who's the communication officer, and she would work with me and Lerato. And I think we would encourage anyone who's interested to come, and they would be able to contact us. I think one of the difficulties is around the logistics is getting them there. We don't have a specific budget to pay for schools to get there. With one small group it was okay, but we would need to look at maybe in our budget including a certain amount of money to enable us to transport the pupils to the school on the day, because that's the biggest issue for many of them. And I think we initially are concentrating on ones that are near the tribunal, but if there's anyone else there, I think they can make a request directly to Chantal or me, and my contact details are on the website. I think the other way in which we are reaching students is we're working with an employment accelerator called Harambee, where we work a lot with their young students that are there mainly to get employment opportunities and learn skills. So we make use of them for interns. Like we now have, I think it's 5 interns, 3 who've come through Harambee who are there for a period to help us out at year end or with specific areas like IT. So that's another way that we're reaching the young. But certainly the schools can make direct contact with us, and we will facilitate visits with them. All the hearings are public, so they can come at any time, but I think the issue is around having a program for them on the day where they can also meet people and see where we work and how we work as well.
Thanks, Chair. If I can just deal with the questions that I'll sometimes, where they concern the same area, I will deal with them at the same time. But generally, the questions about what we deal with our capacity is that, as I said before, we are constrained by the legislation to 11 members, and I don't have the power to appoint a part-time or an acting member, as would a judge president of the division. That's the way they deal with sort of surge in cases. So case management and doubling up the panels. At the moment we've been quite conservative. We run one panel at a time. Occasionally we will have two, which will, each panel has 3 people on. So some days we'll have 6 people, in other words 2 different panels sitting, but the second panel will not be sitting for more than 1 day. So what we will need to do now is to say that we need to have 2 panels or possibly 3 panels sitting simultaneously over a longer period of days. That has a constraint because some of our part-time people, at least 6 of our 11 are part-time, have other jobs and other careers. And so while they'll give us 1 day at a time, they're not going to give us 10 days on a regular basis. So that's one of the challenges. The second is to do better case management. Just say to people, we will, the Americans call it the rocket docket. We will offer you to get your case heard and over within 3 days instead of 10 days, but we need a proper discipline from all the lawyers around. And we've done that successfully with mergers, because merging firms are in a hurry to get their deal done. They're incentivized. We have not been as successful with restrictive practice cases, because defense lawyers want to make a case go as long as possible, so they hopefully can get somebody off if they prolong it. But, you know, it's a way of changing the legal culture, and we'll get there. We'll work on people. The courts are doing the same themselves. And we'll work on the legal culture. But those are the immediate challenges. Chair, you asked about, related to that, is the question of economists. We have, out of our tribunal members, three out of the 11 are economists. It would be nice to have more economists amongst our members. And you're correct, it's very, very important in many of these cases that economists are part of analysing the data and be part of that decision, and our economists serve a very useful role. But we would like to have more on board as our members. But it's obviously up to the President, the Ministers, to who they seek to appoint at a particular time, but also with the current constraint and the number of members we've got. We have within our staff, we have an economist who is a case manager, and we have from time to time, depending on our budget, looked at appointing a more senior person in the economics role, but they would be case managers, not actual members. So, and I think it makes a bit of a difference if somebody is actually a member and part of a panel than if somebody is a case manager. So we do need more economists. It's a challenge we need to address, but certainly the Act allows economists to be appointed, not simply just lawyers. And we nice to actually improve the ratio of economists to lawyers. I should just say, in relation to the Sassel case, it was actually an economist who wrote our decision there. He was our most experienced economist. But it was a judge who was a lawyer who made the appeal court decision, so I would draw one's own conclusions on that. In relation to the banking case, as far as we know, there is only one settlement, which is the Citibank settlement. Whether there are other discussions with the Commission that haven't yet been filed with us, we can't comment on. But we've only received the one settlement with Citibank. This means that out of the 18 firms who are respondents in that case, three are linked, and they're the immunity applicants. One has settled, that was Citibank, that leaves 14 respondents. You're correct that today was the date for filing of exceptions. Let me just explain what that means. Exceptions are not an answer to the case, but they are a procedure by which people can say to the Commission, you have not yet made out a case in your referral against me as a firm, it's deficient. And so we've set up a timetable for people to take these exceptions. They must file by today. So far, only two of the respondents, one is Standard Bank and one is HSBC, have actually filed their exceptions. Standard Bank relates to wanting to get the Commission's record, and HSBC says that the wrong entity has been cited within their grouping. The others may, lawyers have a habit of filing very, very late in our proceedings, so I would expect by the end of the day we will get more exceptions. Whether everybody will accept or not, I'm not sure. Only once the exceptions get heard and decided by us will the respondents be obliged to file their answers. The reason for that is that if the exceptions are upheld, we often give the Commission a chance to amend its referral. It would be unfair on a firm that already answered if the referral gets changed. So that's why everybody has to put in the same playing field. We will hear, in terms of our current timetable, we will hear argument around the exceptions on the 20th and 21st of July. And then we'll then have to decide if the exceptions are good or partially good, whether the Commission should amend or whether the case ends in relation to a particular firm, and the process will take time. Litigation like this unfortunately takes a long time because of the nature of this type of litigation. We ask what happens when conditions are imposed in a matter that could either be conditions that we impose in a merger or conditions imposed as a result of a preemptive practice case. It's the job of the Commission to enforce that the conditions are carried out. So quite often we'll say that a report must be given to the Commission within such and such a time. We will set down time periods, but it's the Commission's job as the police officer to see that these conditions are carried out. If the conditions are violated, then they will come back to us for further enforcement. And that's how it's been in the past. We don't ourselves have either the resources, nor is it desirable for us to work in seeing whether enforcement has been carried out, because we would then be pushed into the police or prosecutor role, where we're in the adjudicative role. The question of putting other languages on the website, I think, is something that we must consider. I think it's a very good idea and a project that we must look at, and I thank the members for raising that with us, and we must look at that particular challenge. One of the challenges that's been that I'm told is to, in a sense, explain the jargon of competition, like abuse of dominance and restrictive practices, in a way that translates it into languages while keeping its meaning. But I think that's a very good idea and a project that we should look at, in a way of perhaps looking at a trend of cases, or looking at big cases in the public domain. You know, what is happening, like, you know, the questions around the banks case, what is that case about, where is it going? And I think these are good ideas that we can look at and use the website to deal with that. The question about the excessive pricing thing. The one that you are talking about, as far as we know, is still with the commission and the investigation process. So it hasn't yet been arrived. It's only once there's an actual referral that reaches our desk. But the reason there are so few excessive pricing cases, and they are rare, is not, I think, because there are no excessive prices, that there are. It's just because at the moment the precedents set by the court are very, very demanding of the commission. All the cases that have been litigated have been unsuccessful. At the case involving Natal initially, and the case involving Sasol. There have, however, been cases where there have been settlements around excessive pricing. And Natal, interestingly, in the recent settlement that they did last year, where they paid a fine of about R1.5 million, settled an excessive pricing case on the basis that they gave a pricing remedy, but they didn't acknowledge that they priced excessively. But they gave the kind of remedy that would otherwise have been imposed. And there had been a previous case with Sasol where they settled an excessive pricing case by selling off a plot. And in the anti-retroviral drugs case, an earlier case from many years ago, again there was a settlement with Glaxo Wellcome, who settled an excessive pricing case on the basis that they got no fine, but they outsourced the licensing to other firms, which would be probably the most successful excessive pricing settlement. But I think the reason we see so few is that at the moment the requirement of law to prove excessive pricing has been very, very demanding, and it's very difficult for the Commission to win that case if it's litigated. But I think the fact that it's taken up this new case shows that the Commission has not been entirely discouraged by case law and is still willing to fight this. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks a lot. Are there any follow-up?
Sorry, Chair, it's been pointed out to me that I haven't answered one question. Why have we only set down 15 out of the 96? I think I haven't explained it very clearly. Of the 96 that are pending, not all of them are actually ready to be set down. And what happens with the case is that the Commission will bring in a complaint referral, and the respondent firm will have to file its defence. You know, it's an answering affidavit. Then the Commission files another paper to reply. Then we have what's called the process of discovery, which is the exchange of documents. So until that whole process has taken place, the case is not yet ready to be set down. So when we talked about 96, there's simply a statistic of the number that have actually been referred to us, not that they are necessarily ready to be set down. Perhaps I gave a wrong impression about that.
That would include the 60. They're not ready also.
The 60 statistic is just the different way that they've counted it. So we talk about them as 96. Some of them are ready and are included amongst the 15 that have already been set down. Some of them aren't. And some of it relates not simply to the difficulties, not simply to our availability, but the Commission itself. Because if the Commission wants the same team on 4 or 5 cases, the Commission will object to them being heard at the same time. And sometimes the private party will say, my advocate so-and-so is in that case. We want him for this case as well. Can they please not be so it's set down at the same time. So it's a matter of not simply of our own needs, but also of the needs of the commission and of the private parties who want to be represented by a team of their choice.
That is confusing, Mr. Manuel. Remember you said on the first thing that you have columns. You have case type cartel, 96. And then case type other, 16. And then you have the same categorization, but this time it's pending set down. And pending set down for hearing. And then the numbers are the same except for one, which is a pending decision. So I think that's where the confusion arises.
Chair, you're right, and I picked up the same question. We actually discussed it this morning with my team as to why the 96 apparently is just a coincidence that they are the same number.
The 96 and 15.
Altogether, we have 112 referrals, and so the number is the same, and 15 have been set down. The 96 pending and the 96 cartel are just coincidental.
You might need to go back and just look at it to be sure, so that we don't also ourselves get confused. Because as they stand now, they seem to be confusing.
Okay,
just to look at the accuracy.
I think if in the next slide, the one that shows the number of days, if we added a column showing if it's a cartel or not, then you would see.
That's exactly.
Those, I think 10 are part of the 15 that have been set down. So we'll improve it for you next time.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank
you. That is them.
Thank you very much, Chief. Just a final question to Mr. Manuel. The presentation has indicated that for the tribunal to work effectively, satisfactorily in the future, they may have to increase on the human resource. Now, the question is there a tangible organogram that they perhaps submitted to the minister to that effect, so that it's not like, okay, after 2 months there are changes in the county and so on, so we need two more and so on. Is there an organogram that has been submitted that will ensure that all the starting issues have been are being taken care of?
The main problems I said is to try and increase the number of members. And that has been discussed with the minister. Various ideas of dealing with the problem have been discussed, which would be a process of legislative amendment. As far as the full-time economist who would be a staff member, who would be not be a tribunal member, but who is somebody we could employ, that we have that person on our organogram at the moment. It's a question of whether we can, you know, get the budget to actually pay for that person, because at that level the salary is very, very high indeed, unfortunately. So we're competing with the private consultancies to get that level of person.
And you're satisfied with the value of your presence currently?
We haven't got that person yet. We've got a more junior
person.
At the moment we've got a more junior person who we are developing, who's actually came to us from the commission, and who is playing a valuable role so far. But our intention, we still have the organograms to get somebody at a much more senior level. So we've got a younger person who's got a few years' experience.
The question is that request put down and then sent to the minister?
Yes.
It is. Okay. Thank you so much. May we then thank you and appreciate the work that you're doing, and wish you all the best for the implementation of this APP. We hope that all the issues raised and the concerns are taken will be taken into consideration as you implement your APP. Yes, we will be interacting, of course, you'll be looking at your first quarter report, and that should tell us exactly where you stand. We can only wish you well, including Mr. Daniel. All the best in the commission. I guess that would then end our interaction with yourself. Thank you. We are going for lunch now at V8. V8 is next to the restaurant, the old assembly restaurant. So sit down lunch. Can you also invite our guests? Hmm? How many of them? Tabitha, can we invite our guests? Okay. Thank you. Let me indicate that when you come back, the chair will be the whip while I'm attending to another meeting. Thank you.
You wanted a...